Good morning, everybody. I'm Larry Jacobs. This is Pre-K-12 Education Talk Radio, part of the American Consortium for Equity in Education. It's the 15th of April. Used to be called Tax Day, okay? It's not anymore. Of course, they extended because of COVID, okay? I'm Larry Jacobs. Welcome to the show, all right? Because we're now part of the Consortium for Equity, all our shows are archived over at ace-ed.org. That's ace-ed.org. Go over there. You can read our wonderful magazine. It really is called Equity and Access. It's a real magazine. It's just online. A lot of great advertisers, a lot of great articles, etc. It's all free over there. Go over, flip through it. There's a ton of information over on the website about equity and access, and also all our podcasts are over there. So again, it's ace-ed.org. We hope you and all our guests today, okay, go over there. Maybe you want to join with us again, free to join the consortium, get your voice heard over at ace-ed.org, ace-ed.org. Today we got a show with my good friends over at COAST, and they put on their EdTech Advocacy and Virtual Policy Fly-In, they called it. I don't think anybody flew in, actually, except on the clouds of ether on the Internet. It was a virtual thing. We're going to talk about it with Reg Lady, who is, I'm going to bring on each of my guests. I'm going to have them introduce themselves and tell, I'm going to introduce them one by one, and then we're going to have everybody, okay, tell what they do. It's a lot easier than me doing it, a lot more fun. Let's see, Reg, are you there?
I am. Good morning, Larry.
Good morning, Reg. Reg Lady, everybody, talk about Foresight Law and Policy, your company. Tell everybody why you're here, Reg.
Yeah, so Foresight is an education law firm based in Washington, D.C. We are close partners with COSIN and CETA and help both organizations with their work on Capitol Hill and at US Ed.
Yeah, CETA, of course, is the State Ed Tech Directors Association, all right? And I noticed when they sent me some information on you, Reg, we have just a little tiny thing in common here besides loving Ed Tech. Okay, Bob Kerry, you used to work for him, right, in telecommunications, the old senator, right?
Yep, that's right. I cut my teeth. First job in Washington was for Senator Kerry. Had a chance to work with him on the creation of the E-rate in the 90s. It was a real special privilege to work with him, Larry.
And by the way, I remember him when he was the young Senator Kerry. Now he's the old Senator Kerry, okay, and former, okay, a long time ago. He when he was running for president in, I think it was 1994, because I lived in Exeter, New Hampshire, in the New Hampshire primary and all that, he actually did a fundraiser at my house.
Oh, terrific.
Yeah,
that's
cool.
Really great.
Right? It was cool. Great. You worked for Senator Nelson, too, in Florida and all that sort of stuff, and you know Ed Tech backwards and forwards. That's Reg Lady. Sean, you there? Wait a minute, Sean. I got to go to the ladies. Hold on a second, Sean. Let me go to the ladies next. Rachel, you there?
I'm here. Good morning.
Good morning. Rachel, everybody, wins the award because she was the first one to call in this morning, and if I'm not mistaken, are you in Oregon?
I am. I'm in Central Oregon, and the sun's just peeking up over the mountains right now.
You win the Larry Jacobs Award of the day because all the other ones are East Coasters. They were the last ones to call in, okay? It's 6 in the morning out there, so you get the award. Thank you, Rachel, okay, for getting up so early.
Thank you, Larry.
Tell us what you do.
Yes.
You're welcome. Tell us what you do out there.
Larry, I am the Chief Information Officer for High Desert Education Service District. We are the regional umbrella for Bend, Crook County, Redmond, and Sisters school districts in Central Oregon. So we provide the regional network services, lots of technology services, legal services, special education services, those kind of operations and domains where it makes sense to pool money and really do that kind of economy of scale. And so as my role, in my role as CIO, my team, we're focusing most of our efforts the past 5 to 6 years on what we call SAM, and that's the security, access, and mobility to the data, information, and tools that folks need to be able to do our jobs, to learn, to teach, and to have good communities here.
Good for you. You are an educational service agency, I assume?
Correct? Yes.
Correct.
Yes, we
and
are.
We work with AESA, your national organization, all the time on everything
yes,
we do
we
with
are.
Equity. Yes. And Joan Wade. And I cannot say enough about ESAs and service agencies, yours every other one, they are the hidden gems of education. And I've been advocating for them, et cetera, for so long. Rachel, thank you. And again, thanks for getting up so early. We do appreciate it.
Yes.
Okay, your voice
is
well received. Thank you. Sarah, are you there?
I am here. Good morning.
Good morning, Sarah. Tell us all about what you do as Senior Director of Ed Policy at good old SIIA.
Sure. Sure. Thanks, Larry. Hi, everyone.
You're welcome.
Sarah Cluck. I am the Senior Director of Education Policy at the Software and Information Industry Association. We are the trade association for the education technology industry. So we work with the vendors that are providing the education technology to the schools and partnering with the schools to do all of the technology that they need to do. And we are really happy. I'm really happy to be here today. Thanks for having us.
It's a pleasure to have you here. Thank you as well. And where are you located today, by the way, Sarah?
I am based in Washington, D.C.
Okay, so Rachel still is the award winner for getting up the earliest.
She is.
She is. Okay, because I know our next guest, Sean, is in New York. Sean, introduce yourself, Mr. McDonough.
Hey, good morning, Larry. Thank you so
good
much.
Morning.
I'm Sean McDonough. I'm the Corporate and Member Engagement Coordinator for the New York State Association for Computers and Technologies in Education, better known as NYSGATE. We are the premier ed tech association. We're affiliated with ISTE, COSINT, and CETA. And my role is to work with our corporate partners and engage with our members to help them work on different ways to enhance technology to really look at the focus of improving teaching and learning. I just want to give a quick shout out. I'm a former CTO at the Allegheny Intermediate Unit in the Pittsburgh area, so I've worked within many of the ESAs in addition to work at the State Department of Education here in Pennsylvania. I'm actually based in Hershey, Pennsylvania, even though I work for a New York association.
Okay, that's good. So you're in Hershey, then let me ask the most important question ever. Steelers or Eagles?
Steagles. For my time
you
working
cheater.
For state government, you had to be in the middle.
You yeah. cheater! That's the by the way, that's the old name of the team during World War. That's the old name of the team during World War II was the old Steagles. You remember that? Do you know that?
That's right. Yep.
Yeah.
Yes, it did.
Good man.
Yeah.
I'm glad Pennsylvania threw me too. I grew up in Philly. Okay. And by the way, you included the Steelers, so I have to let you go now. I'm just kidding. Okay. Philly guy. All right. Good enough.
Thanks.
Good enough. All right. It's great. Okay. Thank you all for being here today. I'm going to go back to Reg. Reg, the EdTech Advocacy and Policy Virtual Fly-In, it already happened, right? Am I correct?
It did. And we did. Yep, that's correct. And we did it in two parts this year. It was an innovative and really successful virtual event.
Okay. What do you mean two parts? Now, talk about that for a second.
Yeah, so, COSIN, CETA, SIA, and ISTE have worked for a number of years on this great, usually a fly-in. This year we tried to do something different to take advantage of the transition to a new administration, the transition to a new Congress. So we held our initial event back in February. We used that opportunity to meet with, an incredible number of House and Senate members from across the country, including, using it to kind of educate members about ed tech, especially during the pandemic. And then just yesterday, we brought together the same group for two important conversations with the Department of Education and the FCC.
Excellent. Okay. But we are completely virtual for all this, right?
Yeah, as has been the case with kind of our normal in-person
with
conferences
everything.
And other meetings, we just use the technology and it worked well.
It does work. We're all learning that it actually does work. Okay, Reg, before I move on to the others, I want to ask you a question, okay? Republicans and Democrats up on the Hill do not get along. If one group wants to go forward on something, the other group automatically says no. And then if the other group wants to go forward on something, the other group automatically says no. And it's like that in both the House and the Senate, okay? But that's what the public sees. When you folks go up there virtually or literally and talk to them, is that different when you're actually talking to them if I may, although on behalf of someone in a private situation, are they actually doing things in the background, or is it just both sides say no to the other? And I think that's an important question these days. Rich.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I think behind the scenes there's much more collaboration. Certainly, this is a difficult time to make some decisions nationally, but what we find, behind the scenes with both staff and members is that they're working much more closely than I think is sometimes conveyed to the public. You know, and we see the fruits of that. A lot of the emergency aid approved over the last 15 months was provided on a bipartisan basis. All of these members, regardless of party, regardless of House versus Senate, you know, they're serving kids. They have constituents that are kids and families that needed help during this period. And I think in an aggregate, they did a good job of coming together for, you know, the emergency aid that we needed, including some of the connectivity funds that are really making sure that all kids will have better access to online learning and some of the other resources they need to get back on their feet going into the next school year.
So all is not hopeless. We can move forward with this stuff. Am I correct?
Yeah, all is not perfect, but, you know.
No.
We're still having conversations, and that's where we need to be.
Yeah, it sounds like an old Arthur C. Clarke thing. If the whole world gets perfect, the whole world blows up. It'll never be perfect. Okay, we're always going to have that, and that's okay. Okay, but we want it to be working forward. Okay, even in baby steps, we want it to be working forward. And you did a good job of explaining that. All right, I want to go back. What was I think top of mind, and Rachel brought this up a minute, is with EdTech is security. And I just heard, I'm not going to say which one, but my nephew works for a school district in Massachusetts that just got hit with, they're not playing it, but they just got hit with ransomware and had to shut down the school district for a few days. Okay, and they're working it out, et cetera, but that ransomware security, student security, et cetera, et cetera. Rachel, as you talk about what you learned at the advocacy meeting, okay, what was top of mind? Am I right? Was it security? Talk to me. Rachel. From Rachel, the amazing Rachel from Oregon, everybody. It's quarter after six there. Go ahead.
Yes. I'll have you talk to some people who can level set for you on that.
Yes.
I do want to say that Sean, I am on the board of directors for ACPE, which is a similar organization here in the Pacific Northwest, the ISTE affiliate and the COSIN affiliate. And I just want to do first a really quick thank you to COSIN and to Reg's team, especially for all of their work supporting us in these advocacy events each year. And
they're
so
great. The Consortium
right.
of School Network and COSIN.org. Sorry, I forgot to mention that at the beginning of the show. Thanks, Rachel.
Yes. We really appreciate the partnership and even just getting reply comments ready, right, on these FCC, for the FCC as they try to push these dollars out quickly this spring. Those two organizations and Shelby, the Schools, Health, and Libraries Broadband Coalition, it's just really great to be able to lean on folks who do this in and out every day. So to answer your question, Larry, security is a growing part of my job every day and has been for at least 5 years a daily presence and an increasing threat. I will say, though, that in terms of this morning's topic and the fly-in and the conversations with our Oregon senators and Congressman Cliff Bentz, which is our Oregon House District 2 representative, we really did focus on the need for better broadband supports, infrastructure, and access. And so as part of that, I'll kind of tie these two together for you. A lot of what I did last spring is drive to driveways with four different hotspots and cell phones in my car. I had a clipboard, really low-tech clipboard, drove to driveways of about 70 homes out in Oregon, in central Oregon, and actually did a speed test on each of those connected devices because those families are in areas where they don't have ISP access. They don't even have wireless ISP access. We're fighting forests and canyons and remote areas. And the mapping that we have available on actually what provider has what service in what area, those are inaccurate. And so as we talked to our representatives, we really reinforced that idea that E-rate works, right? And so please don't mess with that, as you were talking about, like, they're not getting along in D.C. Let's not mess up the things that work. E-rate works. And then secondary to that is this idea of the home connections. And this, again, we'll circle back to security. Home connections are lagging.
No, let's talk about what you want to talk about. That's okay. You just keep going on what you're talking
perfect.
About. Go ahead. Yeah.
Okay. When Commissioner Rosenworcel and our Acting Commissioner Rosenworcel, Acting Chair Rosenworcel, I'll get these titles correct, years ago started talking about the digital divide, as my CIO peers here in the Northwest and I have been reflecting on this, that's really created by the great work of schools and libraries and learning organizations across the U.S., with the support of the federal government related to E-rate and other supports. We've built such great connections in our school buildings and on our campuses that, and in the same time, digital resources have become the right starting point for curriculum. Textbooks are no longer the starting point.
Right.
And so when we send those students home, because they're so well connected in our buildings and in our schools, it's actually a measure of success that we've created this divide that is a good problem to solve in many, many ways. And
well
so
said.
Focusing on that next layer, really getting mapping, really getting access out to our homes.
Mm-hmm.
Here in rural central Oregon, not only does that help for education and my kind of selfish domain that I work in, but that builds stronger communities.
Yeah.
Stronger healthcare,
absolutely.
Stronger small businesses. So we really, there's just that kind of synergy here on all of these things that are coming together. And with security also, as we're connecting more people and they are falling prey to security vulnerabilities and incidents,
mm-hmm.
whether at schools,
mm-hmm.
businesses, or at home, thinking about how we weave those dollars into E-rate, which we're, I think, the groups we've been talking about this morning are involved in helping make that a reality, being able to bolster the subscriptions and the hardware and the software we're able to purchase as education organizations to protect all of those connections we're providing is a logical next step.
It sure is, and I'm just going to agree with you. E-rate works. E-rate works.
Absolutely.
It just needs to be expanded. Okay, and I always draw the analogy, which doesn't make me so brilliant, of the TVA in the 1930s, okay? And what the TVA did by the government, I might add, in the 1930s to bring electricity to everybody, hello, okay, is the same thing that the Biden administration is trying to push through right now for broadband, which, if I may, is the new electricity. It's hard to live without it these days in terms of being having information available to you, et cetera. And now we've learned this last year, having school available to you, having education available to you. E-rate works, and that's a great top of mind thing. And I'll tell you, you said you were driving around, Rachel, checking out the measure of the broadband at places. I talked to so many school districts in far rural areas down south, okay, where the teachers were driving around all day, dropping off paper packets of school books and stuff to the kids in these rural areas where there was no broadband. It was a terrible thing, and that's one of the reasons we started our consortium for equity, and our magazine is Equity and Access, because if you don't have access, you don't have equity, and kids are losing out, all right? And I couldn't agree with you more. I'm just agreeing with you and shouting from with a louder voice, okay, on everything you said, okay? So thank you so much for doing that. You know, let me go over to Sarah. Sarah, you were involved in all this. What was your top of mind stuff? What were your most productive moments at the advocacy consortium there? The advocacy meeting, excuse me.
Sure. Yeah. I mean, I don't know if anyone's having the same experience as I am, but it's hard to remember what happened in February. I do think that we had over 100 meetings on Capitol Hill back in February, and That was before the American Rescue Plan passed through Congress.
Right.
And I think that the all of the folks that had meetings on the, and I'm putting in quotes, on the Hill, because they were all sitting probably where they've been sitting for the past year, for the most part.
Does that mean on their tushies?
On their tushies. Yeah.
On their tushies. At home.
Without getting on an airplane, a train, or
exactly.
in a car
exactly.
to come to Washington, D.C., like they have in the past. So I really think that there was some there were a lot of meaningful discussions that were had
Good.
By people that are actually in the classrooms working with the schools, or from the vendor perspective, working with their partner schools to make sure that kids are getting the tools that they need right now, and also identifying
yep.
what kids are going to need in the future. So I think those were really meaningful discussions. And then I know the discussions yesterday with the U.S. Department of Education, I participated in discussions on privacy and security as well as equity and inclusion. And I think
yeah.
Both were really critical discussions to have, because those are really hot. Those have been hot topics for years. But I think privacy and security has been privacy and security issues have been highlighted as a result of technology being used at home more than it had been in the past.
Exactly.
And also, equity and inclusion the pandemic has just exacerbated longstanding inequities. So these were 30-minute conversations that could have gone on for 4 hours with diverse groups of people from all over the country weighing in on what they needed. I think one of the most important things that came up when I know you brought up security earlier, Larry, but the support that the Department of Homeland Security has for schools on cybersecurity issues. And I think
it's very interesting.
It is interesting. And a really good support for them. And also the resources that the U.S. Department of Education has on privacy on their website, studentprivacy.ed.gov, just to help schools and parents and technology companies navigate the complexities of those issues.
And here's a question I think I know the answer to, but I'm going to ask you since you were talking to the Department of Ed yesterday. Is there a difference between the current administration's Department of Education versus the last administration's Department of Education, as you guys deal with them all the time? Did you detect a difference in attitude and more of a goal, et cetera, in what's there now with the new leadership?
Well, SIA is a nonpartisan organization.
So I'm going to ask the question, but you don't have to ask it sarcastically. But don't you answer sarcastically. But I think it's important. Go ahead.
All of the folks on the call yesterday were incredibly receptive, and a number of them were career
exactly.
Employees. So they were there last year when we met with them virtually, and were just as engaged last year. And I think we as an organization, and I know the other organizations, COSIN, CETA, and ISTE, really value the expertise and dedication that career federal employees have to these issues.
And we got to hand it to those longtime career folks in the Department of Ed. Okay, and what really matters is what happens at the top, and I think we're going to see a much more active and, in my opinion, better Department of Ed. Don't any of you say anything about that, okay? But I will, okay? And I was just curious if you had detected a difference. Sean, what did you talk about when you were there? We heard about Oregon. What's going on in New York, even though you're in Hershey for some reason? Yeah, you're in Hershey.
I actually spoke with representatives for both Pennsylvania and New York. And I think two main areas came across. One at a macro level was explaining that because of the pandemic, a lot of public in our community sometimes would think, okay, education or school stopped. It really didn't. It changed. And I think what we were able to show with different policymakers is as it moved forward, it was using resources within technology that were appropriate to enhance teaching and learning. And those are areas that we've been advocating for 20 plus years. So I think in that way, it kind of helped make policymakers understand that it was a new direction, but what we're advocating for and hopefully, you know, getting the resources from Congress would be beneficial. At a micro level, one of the things we did share is related to cybersecurity. New York State had recent regulations updated on the student data privacy. They were implemented just about a month before the pandemic shut down. But what it really made is New York school districts had to ensure that any third-party application was adhering to the state's new regulations to their what their Ed Law 2D statute. And the tough part for many districts was they had to individually go out and get connection with different companies to make sure the companies were complying with the state law. That's a challenge when you have 700 different school districts in New York State who are trying to then get after Google or other companies. I think understanding that and letting Congress know as they may look to make changes to FERPA or other cybersecurity, it's very tough, especially our rural districts and small ones, because they just don't have the manpower and the team to try to get out and make sure that they're getting those sign-offs and ensuring that people are using the right applications and we're not putting kids at risk.
Exactly. Red, you want to chime in on any of this?
Yeah, the cyber threat can't be underestimated, and I think we have work to do as kind of national groups in Washington to educate the broader community of, education leaders who might work outside of ed tech about just how difficult the work is for, Rachel and her peers, and just the incredible costs and huge amounts of lost learning time that are associated, especially with these ransomware attacks, but just regular denial of service attacks. And I want to mention that COSIN and CETA and a number of other partners earlier this year filed a petition with the FCC asking, the agency to make, as Rachel pointed out, advanced firewall a regular part of the eligible services list of the program. And that's just one step. I mean, we need more. Congresswoman Matsui and Congressman Langevin are kind of leading and pushing on the Department of Education to be more involved. Congresswoman Matsui also has a bill that would make DHS a source of grant funding for schools in cybersecurity. So there's a lot happening, but we need the broader community to really understand it, because it's a big threat, obviously.
At DHS, Department of Homeland Security, right?
Yeah, that's right. That's the technical arm for this work across the economy, certainly, and there's expertise there that I think can be brought to bear on the education community as well and help.
Oh, you're absolutely right. I never thought of that, though. I never thought how the two might work together, and that's really, really important these days. Let me ask this. I'm going to go back to Rachel. Rachel, we can look back now, okay? We all thought everything was doing kind of okay February 2020. Then March 2020 hit in the pandemic, okay? And suddenly we learned that everything wasn't really as okay as we thought. All right, but we've had a year now, a little bit over a year now. We're in April, okay, to look back and make change. What are the changes that are going to that you're hoping to see happen? Okay, one of them broadband expansion, etc. But just as you look back on it, what have we learned? I'm going to ask all of you this. We'll start with Rachel because she's on her 15th cup of coffee already. Go ahead, Rachel.
Just my first so far. So
good girl.
Thanks for rolling with us.
Good girl. Wonderful choice. Good. What are you doing? What coffee do you drink? Are you on Starbucks? Starbucks? Seattle's best.
We have a wonderful Sister's Coffee here in Central Oregon, and it's fantastic. Black Butte Gold. It's my coffee.
There you go, everybody. High test from Oregon. Okay, go ahead, Rachel. Yeah.
Yes, so thanks for that. And I just want to follow up really quickly on the security pieces that Reg and Sarah mentioned. So DHS is absolutely just key support right now. Education is one of the 16 critical infrastructure areas that the CISA organizations and our regional CSAs are helping support. My region just met with Teresa Messe, our Oregon CSA. There are amazing resources available. So for any other national, across the nation, CIOs, K-12 sitting on this call, make sure you connect with your CISA representatives in your state or region. Everything from vulnerability scanning to
that
tabletop exercises.
Yeah, it's amazing. I mean, who would funk it? But
yeah,
thank you. Well,
it's really great. So thanks to Sarah and Reg for also including those conversations in the work that they do. And then in terms of reflecting, what a year.
Yep.
So I think there's a layer that is infrastructure-based, and that's a lot of our conversation here today, that idea of let's get better mapping in place so Rachel and her peers aren't driving driveways to figure out which, you know, T-Mobile versus AT&T versus Verizon versus an ISP, what we're going to put in that house. Starlink is now in play, right, in our region. Let's get mapping so that we can find out where the gaps truly are so that we can start closing those gaps. And what's interesting is I think that is my reflection on how this relates to the students who are the center of all this work. What this last year did – go ahead, Larry.
No, you go ahead. Finish up your thought.
Okay. What this last year did, similarly, on how we learn and how we teach and how we communicate, was a huge blast of sunlight or a flashlight kicking up all of those little dust motes, right? Like as I'm looking through the window and the sun's getting really bright and I can see all the dust that has accumulated this week. it shines light on
good analogy.
Those gaps that in a regular year we're running so fast and we're seeing each other in person and we've got noisy hallways and classrooms full of amazing human beings who are learning. And what we didn't see when we were together in person are specifically some of these just blatant gaps in equity and that access to learning.
Yeah. Yeah.
What we didn't see were the students.
It's frightening.
And the students who are actually enjoying this year of distributed learning, such as it is, as imperfect as it's been, because in person wasn't an ideal fit for them either. And
you
in person,
on, right?
as we're hearing from so many students and families and teachers, they can't wait to get back in person. So I think if I were to have a hope that once we finish recovery, right, as we kind of think about this in like incident terms and security terms, once we finish our recovery, our reaction, and we're actually into recovery and doing that kind of hot wash and reflecting, I really hope that this does strengthen our ties to that better individual options for individual students and families.
I hope so, too, and that was well said. We kind of learned a little bit that one size doesn't necessarily fit all, okay? We always talk about individualized instruction and all that, and this year proved how important that was. I might add for a lot of groups, and I use this group as an example, the LGBTQ kids, okay, who were lots of times picked on and all that sort of thing, and I've heard time and time again how those kids really do want to stay, not all of them, I don't want to stereotype, but a lot of those kids, okay, want to stay home and learn and not be picked on and all that. And I hopefully over the course of time with enough social and emotional learning, they never will be picked on again, but it's tough in these days. So you're absolutely right, Rachel. We've learned a lot this year. Sarah, as you talk to your group, and you're an industry group, what do you think the industry's learned?
You know, we are working with our members right now to sort of do a retrospective of what happened, how companies helped schools. We don't want to talk about how they did their sales or anything like that, but how they actually worked with their customers to make that transition to distance learning, to hybrid and back into the school. So we're trying to figure out that we're working with them to identify some stories there, and also to identify what were the lessons learned that they can carry forward. Because everyone has said, this isn't just a one-time thing. Hopefully we'll never have to go through a pandemic again, but I don't know if, like, I grew up in Minnesota. We had a lot of snow days. Are snow days going to exist anymore? Or are they going to be distance?
I have to tell you a funny story on that. I was talking to one of the superintendents in a northern climate a few weeks ago, and he said, we had a snow day, and I told everybody to take off because I wanted to return to normalcy, even though no one is at school. They said, let's have a snow day. Okay.
Yeah.
Just to make it seem normal. Yeah.
Just the surprise of having a snow day was always wonderful. But even if there's something happens and you need to, and people need to learn from home or work from home, how are we going to make that happen in a seamless way, where all students and all people are able to access the things that they need to access, no matter who they are or where they are. So I think we are working with our members to identify how they helped address equity issues, those longstanding equity issues, and how to take those lessons forward, not leave them behind just because we all have received the vaccine and we're going to be able to go out to dinner and see our families. Let's take some lessons forward.
You get that. By the way, that's Sarah from SIIA, the Software and Information Industry Association, the education part of that, okay? And they do a great job. And, you know, Sarah, when we started our little consortium last year, okay, we it's working. We're trying to create a place where the educators and the industry can get together kind of in a non-sales situation. And a lot of the educators see the industry as the sales rep that pops into their door every so often. But the industry is a lot deeper than that, okay? They really stepped up, and they really understand education. And the more it's a very symbiotic relationship, the teachers to the industry. And the more they understand each other and work together, the industry will be supplying what the educators need, and they don't know what the educators need until the educators talk to them. Okay, and it's a wonderful relationship, and we're really trying to enhance that. SIIA has always done a great job, okay, of pushing the industry forward, the ed tech industry forward. I got to tell you, that's really something, so I appreciate that. Sean, look back over the year. We got about 2 minutes for you, my friend. Go ahead.
Thanks, Larry. I think just one thing we should say, the genie is out of the bottle. I think for good or for bad, what's happened since last year has really transformed our whole idea of what school is, what learning is all about. And I think maybe going forward, for us to kind of infuse the best uses that EdTech can provide to focus in on that personalized learning is going to be critical. I think the next big thing leading into us is the idea of sustainability. It's, you know, we can't just build this once and think, okay, we survived this pandemic, we moved on. It really has to become top of mind for the community, for the school, for policymakers to really understand, especially with the risks that we have with cybersecurity, because many school districts are probably the most vulnerable going forward. But there's no going back, I mean, because we just can't afford to. Everything has changed, maybe for good.
The pandemic was horrible. It still is horrible. People are dying, okay? And the families are losing members, and it's horrible. Okay, let's get that out of the way. But it also presents an opportunity, and again, I'll use my World War II analogy, okay? When World War II ended, the British healthcare system was destroyed. And instead of bringing up the old one again, they built a new one. And that new one takes care of everybody, okay, at no charge to the people, all right? And that basically, okay, is what we need to do here. If we don't see the horror of this as an opportunity, we deserve everything we get. Okay, and I just hope, and Reg, you finish this up, bring it home, okay, that you're the legal expert, the political expert, okay, that the politicians are there to fund it and understand it. Are we looking good, Reg? What do you think for over last year and then next year? Reg Lady.
Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, one thing this emergency has shown that you know, big problems need require collaboration, and that's partnerships at the federal level, Republican and Democratic, partnerships between state and local, between private and not-for-profit. We got to get there together. And I think we will. I mean, I think there's some tough conversations ahead, of course, in the social fabric about how we make policy. But, you know, we've got some serious problems confronting the country and the world, and people need to lock arms and step forward together.
And let me just say, we are not going to solve those problems without a great education. I have to say this, for every kid, okay? If we don't do it for every kid, we're not doing it for any of us. Okay, you know what? That's what you folks do. Okay, my four guests today. That's what you folks do. Okay, and you're planning for the future. EdTech is not the future. EdTech is, you can drop the tech. EdTech is education. Okay, these days. Okay, and it's how we teach and with the tool we basically teach with. It used to be called chalk. Okay, now it's called technology, and you guys are in the forefront of that. Okay, so I thank you all. I'll leave it on that. Okay, thank you, Rachel. Okay, good to get to that second cup of coffee. Thank you, Rachel.
Thank you, Larry. Thank you.
Yeah, you're welcome. To Sarah and Sean and Reg, everybody, please stay safe. Okay, and we'll talk again soon. You guys take care. Thank you so much. Bye bye.
Thanks, Larry.
Thank you. Bye bye.
You're welcome. Bye bye. Okay, that's my gang from COSIN, COSIN.org, and SIIA, all right? And, you know, I got to tell you, I mean, it's just amazing all the good work they do. Rachel, you're part of an ESA. I love that. And Sean from NYSCATA in New York City, it's just great stuff, all right? Reg, thanks a million. Sarah, what more can I say? Well, Lauren Clive over at ACE-ED.org, our consortium for equity and education. Go over there. It's ACE-ED.org. You'll enjoy what you see. Thanks for listening.